Thank you, Matthew. Welcome, everyone, to the bidder information session for the March 2022 solicitation. This is the third solicitation under PECO's fifth default service program, or DSP-5, as I'll call it throughout the presentation. So my name is Katie Orlandi, and presenting with me today is Matt Pettit. We're from NERA Economic Consulting, who will serve as the independent evaluator for PECO's DSP-5. Also with us today are representatives from PECO who will be available to help answer questions you may have at the conclusion of the presentation. So in today's presentation, we're going to provide an overview of the DSP-5 program, details on the qualification and bidding process, and then we'll also cover solicitation-specific information, including the products available and the calendar with deadlines. I'm going to start here with a disclaimer. Any statements herein describing or referring to documents and agreements are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by reference to such governing documents. The governing documents are the Pennsylvania Public Utilities Commission order related to PECO's fifth default service program from December 3rd, 2020. The RFP rules and addendum to the RFP rules posted December 21st, 2021. Also, the PECO Energy Company Pennsylvania Default Service Supplier Master Agreement, or Uniform SMA, as we'll refer to this document, which was also posted on December 21st. These documents are currently available on PECOProcurement.com. So the documents that are related to DSP-5 proceeding with the Commission are posted to the regulatory page, and then the RFP documents, such as the Rules Uniform SMA, are posted to the Supplier Information page. So as I mentioned, NERA serves as the third-party independent evaluator for the solicitations under DSP-5. Our role is to ensure the transparent process for the RFP. Specifically, we're going to be the main point of contact with RFP bidders. We'll ensure that the RFP rules that were approved by the Commission are followed and the qualifications are evaluated equitably and fairly. We'll evaluate the bids on a price-only basis, and then we'll submit a final report on the results to the Commission. The agenda for today's call is as follows. In the first half of the presentation, I'm going to cover DSP-5 and the products that are available this March. I'll provide an overview of the RFP process and contract and rates. And then I'll pass the presentation to Matt, who will continue with the RFP process details, including the requirements to qualify to bid and the bid submission procedures. Matt will also provide an overview of the RFP website and how you can get in contact with us. And then at the end of the presentation, we'll take any questions through the chat function. So under DSP-5, PECO will procure full requirements service for their default service customers. As listed in bullet four here, full requirements includes energy, capacity, ancillary services, certain transmission services, and alternative energy portfolio standard, or AEPS, requirements. Default service customers are those customers that do not elect to take service from an electric generation supplier or return to PECO after receiving service from an EGS. Under DSP-5, solicitations will be held in March and September of each year through 2024. For a total of 8 solicitations. And the supply to be procured is generally for the period of June 1, 2021 to May 31, 2025, but some contracts for products procured towards the end of the program will extend beyond June 2025. Under DSP-5, products are procured for 3 classes, as shown in this table. And in the March solicitation, there are products available for all 3 classes. The residential class consists of all residential customers. The small commercial class is commercial customers with less than 100 kW of annual peak demand. and the consolidated large commercial and industrial class consists of commercial customers with 100 kW or greater of annual peak demand. So this slide provides the product characteristics for each of the classes. So suppliers for the residential and small commercial classes are paid on a fixed price basis, which is based on the supplier's average winning bid price for each megawatt hour of load served. So the bid you submit, the bid price is an all-in price. These two classes are served via laddered and overlapping 1-year and 2-year contracts that are procured twice a year. Suppliers for the CCI class are paid on the basis of 3 components. It's the energy price to PJM's day-ahead market at the PICO residual aggregate zone, the capacity obligations price to PJM's reliability pricing model, and then the supplier's average winning bid price submitted through the RFP. There will be a product available for the CCI class once a year in each March solicitation, and the supply period is for 12 months beginning on June of the upcoming year. For each class, default load is divided into a number of tranches so that each tranche represents a fixed percentage of the load for that class. So for the residential class, there are 62 total tranches, and each tranche represents 1.6% of the default load for that class. There are 24 tranches for the small commercial class, and each tranche represents 4.17%, and there are 8 tranches total of the CCI class, with each tranche representing 12.5% of the default load. So on this slide here, we also provide the total and default peak information and an approximate megawatt measure for each class. This data was updated as of December 2021, and it's applicable to the upcoming 22-23 planning year. So as I mentioned, there are products for all 3 classes in this solicitation. The naming convention for each product is as follows. Each product is going to have 3 labels. First, the customer class served. Second is the length of the supply period. And third is the date of the start of the supply period. So there are 2 products available in this solicitation for the residential class. There's a 12-month and 24-month product, and the supply period for both of these products starts on June 1, 2022. It's the same thing for the small commercial class. The available tranches are for 12 and 24-month products starting June 1, 2022. And then finally, there's a 12-month product for the CCI class also starting June 1, 2022. There are load caps that apply so that a supplier cannot supply more than 50% of the default load for a class at any point in time. The load caps for this solicitation will account for products won under DSP-4 that have a supply period that overlap with DSP-5, and for products that were won in the March and September 2021 solicitations under DSP-5. So all information pertaining to products available in this solicitation, so the number of tranches available and load caps, are available on the website, and they're posted in the addendum to the RFP rules. So on this slide, we provide the available tranches and load caps for the residential class. Again, there are 2 products. For the 12-month product, there are 12 available tranches, and for the 24-month product, there are 9 tranches available. As I mentioned before, there are load caps. So there are a total of 62 tranches for this class and a load cap of 50%. So in the case of the residential class, load caps are calculated as 31 tranches, which is 62 tranches times 50%, minus the tranches that a supplier is serving for products won under DSP-4 and that have a supply period that overlaps with DSP-5, and products won in solicitations in March and September 2021. So the products that overlap with the upcoming supply period are listed in this table here. So any current default supplier serving these products listed in the table can use the table to determine if they have bidder-specific load caps. And we also will provide bidder-specific load caps to qualified bidders in their bid form. Load caps are calculated in a similar way for the small commercial class. For the small commercial class, there are two products available this March. Six tranches are available for the 12-month product, and three tranches are available for the 24-month product. As for load caps, there are a total of 24 tranches for this class, so suppliers are constrained on the number of tranches they can bid to 12 tranches minus the number of tranches the supplier is currently serving for the products listed in this table. For the CCI class, there are eight tranches available, and since there are no overlapping contracts for this class, all suppliers are capped at four tranches. As a final note before I move to the RFP process overview, PJM's base residual auction for the 23-24 delivery year has been further delayed due to a FERC proceeding. Based on the timeline in the proceeding, the delayed BRA is not expected to be held prior to the bid date on March 15th. Currently, PJM has proposed to reschedule for June 8th, 2022, but this date remains subject to FERC approval. So the result of the BRA for the 22-23 delivery year, when held, will provide a visible capacity price for the last 12 months of the 24-month products. And bidders that offer to supply the 24-month products are entirely responsible for any uncertainty related to the lack of visibility of the capacity price for the 23-24 delivery year. So this next section of the presentation, I'm going to provide an overview of the stages of the RFP process. So I'll start off with a schedule. The process is going to kick off next week with the opening of the Part 1 form on Thursday, and then it's going to proceed over the next 4 weeks. The application process is in two parts. First, applicants submit the Part 1 proposal with their qualification materials. And again, that begins on February 17th when the Part 1 form becomes available. And then the Part 1 proposal must be submitted by noon on the Part 1 date on March 1st. Applicants that qualify will be notified that they can submit a Part 2 proposal on the Part 1 notification date on March 3rd. The following day, applicants can begin submitting their Part 2 materials, which includes posting a pre-bid letter of credit as pre-bid security. And the Part 2 proposal due date is March 10th. Bidders are notified whether they've qualified to submit bids on the Part 2 notification date on March 14th, and the bid date is the next day, Tuesday, March 15th. Now, qualified applicants will have an opportunity to practice bid submission. We'll hold a training session the week prior on March 9th. By March 16th, the independent evaluator will submit its report on the RFP to the commission, and the commission will render its decision by close of business on March 17th. So the RFP results on the bid date are contingent on final PUC approval. As I mentioned, we're going to submit a confidential report on winning bids to the PUC on the day after the bid date, and then the PUC will issue a decision within one business day of receipt of the report. Then after 15 days of the close of the solicitation, some information, including the average winning bid price and the number of tranches procured, will be posted to PICOProcurement.com. And Matt's going to touch on this posting a little more in the next half of the presentation. So the proposal process is entirely online. You're going to submit Part 1 and Part 2 materials through online forms or by email. These materials include providing required information about the bidder and then uploading supporting documents like financial statements. Bidders are also required to upload or email signature pages that we refer to as inserts. These inserts are provided by us in Microsoft Word format, and each insert contains instructions for completing and signing the insert. The pre-bid letter of credit must be submitted as an electronic PDF file to PICOProcurement@nero.com. A hard copy version of the letter of credit cannot be accepted, so please speak with your bank to ensure that they follow the instructions and provide the executed document electronically. so as I mentioned, both the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals are going to require submission of inserts. These inserts are already posted to PICOProcurement.com on the Documents page under the Supplier Information section of the website. Applicants that are new, meaning they've not qualified in a solicitation held under DSP 5, will need to download the zip file labeled P1 Inserts New Bidders. Applicants that have qualified in a solicitation under DSP 5 but did not have winning bids should download the zip file labeled P1 Inserts Previously Qualified Bidders. And then default suppliers or bidders who have winning bids in a solicitation under DSP 5 should go ahead and download the zip file labeled P1 Inserts Default Suppliers. So it's important to start with the right set of inserts. So if you have any questions about your status as new, previously qualified, or default supplier, just please contact us. And also posted, you can see at the bottom of the screen here, is a zip file called P2 Inserts Early. And so this zip file contains inserts that require a signature and are due with the Part 2 proposal. But if your officer would like to make all signatures at the same time, then you can go ahead and download the P2 zip file as well, and you can submit those Part 2 related inserts with the Part 1 proposal for evaluation. If you're a new applicant and you've not yet registered for an account to access the online forms to submit your proposal, you should go ahead and do that now. You can register by going to PICOProcurement.com and clicking on the Contact Us link on the left-hand side, and then clicking on the Register for an Account link. Alternatively, you could go ahead and send us an email to PICOProcurement@nira.com with the information that's requested here. And the individual that registers for the account will receive an email prior to the Part 1 window with account activation instructions. Current account holders do not need to re-register through the website or by email. So a current account holder is an applicant that qualified to participate in a solicitation in 2020 or later, or an account holder that's registered in 2020 or later. So if you fall into this bucket, even though you don't have to re-register, every account holder will have to activate their account in order to access the form. So for a bidder that qualified to participate in a solicitation in 2020 or later, the representative will receive an email with an activation link prior to the opening of the Part 1 window. And if you're an account holder as of 2020 but have not participated, then it's the individual that registered for the account that's going to receive the email with the activation link. And when you receive that email, we'll also be sending instructions to access and complete the online form. And there'll be screenshots to provide instruction for how to activate your account as well. And once your account is active, you can navigate to the online forms directly by going to dspproposal.com. You can also access the proposal site through the RFP website by clicking on the links at the bottom of the left-hand navigation bar, or at the top of the column on the right, as shown in the screenshot. This next section is going to provide some details on the contract and rates. So PICO uses the uniform SMA developed for DSP-3 with some EDC-specific provisions included. Appendix D to the SMA includes the PGM billing statement line items and identifies the responsible party, either PICO or the default supplier, for each item. Beginning with DSP-5, default suppliers must complete a newly added Appendix H each year. Appendix H is the form of generation supply report and requests a percentage breakdown of the energy supplied by source for the year. And the completed annex should be provided to PICO by March 31st each calendar year. The uniform SMA that's being used for DSP-5 was largely unchanged from DSP-4, and we provide a link here at the bottom of the slide if you'd like to view a red line comparison between the uniform SMA from DSP-5 to DSP-4. Okay, this slide provides the credit requirements under the uniform SMA. For the fixed price products, credit exposure to PECO is based on a calculation of mark-to-market exposure that's net of accounts receivable or accounts payable to the supplier. For the spot price product, the credit exposure begins at $250,000 per tranche and is recalculated each month. So whether a supplier has to submit financial guarantees during the term of the SMA is dependent on a credit evaluation that's specified in the contract. Each RFP bidder will receive the results of a credit evaluation based on the financial documents and ratings provided in the Part 1 proposal, and that'll come to you with the Part 1 notification, and that's comes to you well ahead of contract execution. And so if a financial guarantee is required, it can be posted in the form of cash, a letter of credit, or in the form of a guarantee. And there's a standard form of guarantee and letter of credit that are provided as exhibits to the uniform SMA. Default suppliers are responsible for providing alternative energy credits during the term of the uniform SMA for PECO to comply with its Alternative Energy Portfolio Standards Act, as well as other orders and regulations and rules. An alternative energy credit is issued for each megawatt hour of generation from a qualified alternative energy system. All solar credits must be compliant and eligible to be retired in Pennsylvania in accordance with Act 40 from 2017, and all Tier 2 credits must also be compliant in accordance with Act 114 that was signed into law in November 2020. If any requirement under the AEPS Act changes during the term of the SMA, then default suppliers are responsible to comply with any new obligations. The current obligation for each type of AEC is provided at the bottom of this slide here. During the transaction confirmation process, each default supplier will be required to specify the average cost for each type of AEC, non-solar Tier 1, solar Tier 1, and Tier 2. And we'll remind you of this requirement to specify the prices in the transaction confirmation a few times throughout the process. So under the terms of the Uniform SMA, a default supplier's AEPS obligation may be reduced by a number of AECs allocated to default suppliers in the transaction confirmation. The number of AECs per tranche to be allocated towards a default supplier's obligation is provided prior to the opening of the Part 1 window in each solicitation. And I'm going to provide those on the next slide. And the allocation, any of the AECs allocated by PECO to the default supplier's AEPS obligation remain the property of PECO and are not transferred to the supplier. So this slide here provides the number of AECs per tranche that PECO will allocate to winning default suppliers in this March 2022 solicitation. This slide here provides some details on the rates. So the default service rates for a class are calculated on the basis of prices determined through the RFP and incorporated quarterly true-up and administrative costs as well. For the residential class, rates also include purchases by PECO to serve approximately 1% of the default load. In September 2021, PECO introduced time-of-use default service rate options for the residential and small commercial default service customers with smart meters. The new TOU options are not applicable to customers in PECO's customer assistance program. And there's a default service rate calculation model that's posted to PECO's website. That model is accessible through this link that's provided with the bottom bullet here. So on the final slide here in this section, we provide some details on PECO's agreement with the New York Power Authority. So under a multi-state agreement, PECO receives for the benefit of its residential customers an annual allocation of capacity and associated energy from the St. Lawrence Hydroelectric Project operated by the New York Power Authority. The allocation is dependent upon the number of customers that PECO serves, and it is 5.6 megawatts for energy year 21-22. Notably, a supplier's residential tranches are the share of the default load for the residential class that excludes this allocation. So with that, I'm going to pass the presentation to Matt Pettit, and he'll continue with details on how to apply to participate in the program.
Thank you, Katie. So over the next several slides, I'll be discussing the details of the requirements and the process for the RFP. So this will include both the Part 1 and Part 2 process. And this is not necessarily an exhaustive summary of the entire process, so we do encourage you to consult the RFP rules as well as the addendum. So again, there are two parts to the proposal, the Part 1 proposal to become qualified and the Part 2 proposal to become eligible to submit bids. Only RFP bidders that have successfully completed the Part 1 proposal can then move on to the Part 2 proposal. In addition, prior to the Part 1 proposal, there is an alternative guarantee process, which is strictly optional and is geared towards RFP bidders that have corporate policies which preclude them from using the standard form of the guarantee, which is appended to the Uniform SMA. Bidders that have qualified pursuant to a complete Part 1 proposal will be able to participate in the bid submission training. And finally, bidders that have successfully completed the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals will become eligible to submit bids. So again, as I mentioned, the alternative guarantee process is for RFP bidders that have corporate policies which preclude them from using the standard form of the guarantee. And in that case, bidders may submit an alternate form of guarantee and request consideration from PECO for use of that form. The deadline for this was February 1st. And separately, RFP bidders will also have the opportunity to propose modifications to the standard guarantee during the Part 1 window. So there will be three different types of RFP bidders for purposes of the Part 1 proposal. One of these bidders will be new bidders, which will be those RFP bidders who have not previously qualified, which is to say they have not successfully completed a Part 1 proposal under DSP-5. Important to note is that even if you completed a successful Part 1 proposal under a prior DSP, but not this current DSP, you will be considered a new bidder. The second type of RFP bidder is a previously qualified bidder. This type of bidder is one that has previously qualified, which again means they have successfully completed a Part 1 proposal, but they have not executed a uniform SMA for tranches 1 under DSP-5. And the third type of RFP bidder is a default supplier, and this designation is for those bidders that have previously qualified and executed a uniform SMA for tranches 1 under DSP-5. And the second and third types of bidders, so that does not include new bidders, may be eligible to use an abbreviated Part 1 proposal process. There are six discrete components to the Part 1 application. Bidders will provide contact information, including the name and address of the bidder, the designation of an officer who will be able to execute the contract and bind the bidder, and this individual will be responsible for signing all the required certifications and representations in both the Part 1 and Part 2 applications, the designation of an authorized representative who will serve as the point of contact, and optionally, the designation of nominees who will be copied on correspondence between the bidder and the independent evaluator. In the second section, bidders will provide financial and credit information, including quarterly financial statements and credit ratings for the entity on whose financial standing the bidder is relying. So that could be the bidder's own financial standing or that of a guarantor. And additional information will be required for bidders submitting a proposal under an agency agreement. In the third section, bidders are asked but are not required to provide information to prepare the uniform SMA. So in the event the bidder goes on to become a winning bidder, that information would be used to prepare the SMA. And if the bidder elects not to provide this information with the Part 1 proposal, then they will have to provide it after the bid date, assuming they do become a winning bidder. Bidders will also have the opportunity to propose modifications to both the letter of credit that is appended to the uniform SMA that would be used during the supply period, as well as the pre-bid letter of credit that is used to provide financial guarantees with the Part 2 proposal. Bidders can propose modifications through the Part 1 date, but before doing so, we do encourage you to look at the modifications that have already been approved by PICO for use in the pre-bid letter of credit, which are available on the RFP website. Additionally, if the proposed modifications you submit contain the same modifications as a previous solicitation, then the modifications will not be reviewed again, but you may request that the independent evaluator email to you PICO's assessment of the prior submittal. If you do choose to propose modifications, then they should be provided in Microsoft Word with track changes clearly showing all modifications that you are proposing. PICO will then review the changes and responses will be provided within 2 business days for the standard letters of credit and standard guarantee. For the post-bid letter of credit, the review will be provided within 7 days. Any newly approved modifications for this solicitation are then added to the list of acceptable modifications and posted to the RFP website ahead of the Part 2 proposal for use in the Part 2 proposal. So I mentioned that the Part 1 proposal consists of 6 components, and we've now discussed the first 3. The 4th section will require bidders to make certain certifications and representations. So, for example, that the information provided in the Part 1 proposal is true and complete to the best of the officer's knowledge. Bidders will be able to submit representations required by the Part 2 proposal in their Part 1 proposal for early processing. Again, the officer will be required to sign all of these certifications and representations. So in the event they are unavailable to sign the Part 2 representations during the Part 2 window, this option is made available. For foreign RFP bidders or bidders relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor, there will be additional requirements. In these circumstances, there are additional documents that are required for the execution of the uniform SMA. Bidders to which this applies will be able to submit drafts for those documents with their Part 1 proposal. And lastly, there is a section in the online Part 1 form for justification of omissions where bidders can explain the reasoning for any information they were not able to provide. And all materials for the Part 1 proposal are due by noon on March 1st. Part of the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals will require the bidder to complete inserts, which are separate documents in Microsoft Word format. The way in which a particular insert must be signed and submitted is detailed in the header of each insert, and there are different streams through which the signature and submission process can progress. The bidder may use a digital signature so long as it is accompanied by an additional document or information that verifies the identity of the signatory. The bidder in certain circumstances may use an electronic signature so long as it is emailed to PICO procurement@nira.com, either from the signer or with the signer on copy. And lastly, the bidder may use a notarized signature where the insert will be printed, signed, scanned, and uploaded to the online form. So following a bidder's submission of the online form, the independent evaluator will promptly review the proposal, and during the review process, the bidder's account will be temporarily locked. The bidder will receive either a complete notice, meaning all required information for the Part 1 proposal has been provided, or they will receive a deficiency notice. But in either case, the bidder will be advised about the status of its proposal on the same day, if materials are received before noon or on the following business day otherwise. If a bidder receives a deficiency notice, that notice will detail the items which require correcting or clarifying, and the bidder will generally have until the deadline of the Part 1 proposal or 1 business day to respond to the notice. For those RFP bidders that successfully complete the Part 1 proposal, they will receive a Part 1 notification, and this notification is expected by March 3rd. In addition to being notified that you have become a qualifying bidder, by completing the Part 1 proposal, you will also receive some additional documents that are necessary for your continued participation in the process, And those will include a credit assessment based on the financial information you will have submitted with the Part 1 proposal. You will receive a customized bid form and instructions on the bid submission process. And you will also receive confidential login information so that you can participate in the bidder training and submit bids on bid date. Great, so moving on to the Part 2 proposal, all bidders will be required to provide a number of certifications and representations, and as I mentioned before, these can be provided during the Part 1 window for early processing if you elect to do so. Certain bidders have additional requirements, so for example, those bidders that are relying on the financial standing of a guarantor would be required to provide an intent to provide a guarantee from the guarantor. And also provide, those bidders will be asked to provide information to prepare the guarantee. If the bidder is a foreign entity or relying on the financial standing of a foreign entity, then that bidder is also asked to provide the documents that will be required with the uniform SMA. And finally, all bidders will be providing a pre-bid letter of credit, and I'll provide some more detail on this on the next slide. But just a note that the letter of credit must be submitted only via electronic means in PDF format to the independent evaluator at peopleprocurement@nira.com. And all Part 2 proposals are due by March 10th. So, as I was saying earlier, all bidders will provide a pre-bid letter of credit in an amount of $250,000 per tranche that the bidder intends to bid on the residential and small commercial products, and $125,000 per tranche that the bidder intends to bid on the CCI products. For a bidder that intends to bid on all available tranches in the residential and small commercial products, the maximum amount of the pre-bid letter of credit is $7.5 million, and the maximum letter of credit amount for the CCI product is $500,000. Now, it is possible that a bidder is not eligible to bid on all tranches, and that would be true if the bidder has a binding bidder-specific load cap, and this bidder-specific load cap is also why the independent evaluator issues to each bidder a customized bid form. For purposes of submitting the letter of credit, each bidder must use the standard form as posted to the RFP website or incorporating only approved modifications to the pre-bid letter of credit also posted to the RFP website. So that will complete the overview of the requirements of the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals, and I'll now discuss the bid submission process along with the post-bid process. So what is a bid? A bid is a price in dollars per megawatt hour for one tranche of a product. It is automatically rounded to the nearest cent using standard rounding rules. The officer of the bidder will certify that the bid is binding until 6 business days after the bid date, and the bid must be sufficiently supported by the pre-bid security. And we will confirm this is the case when you receive your bid form. Bids will be evaluated by the independent evaluator on a price-only basis. So here's an example of the bid form, and prior to the bid date, again, each bidder will be provided a personalized bid form to be submitted on the bid date. Section 2 of the bid form provides the area for the bidder to enter prices, wherein the bids in each cell serve as a bid on a single tranche. The bid form will provide running totals for your convenience, and additionally will provide a check as to whether you have exceeded any load caps. And the load caps will be hard-coded by us on a per-bidder basis prior to you receiving your bid form. So on bid date, your bids must be submitted between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, March 15th. Bids are submitted online through a secure file transfer system, and we will call you and confirm receipt within 30 minutes of submission. Bidders will have the opportunity to correct errors if there are any, and for this reason, bidders are encouraged to submit early. Bidders will have a minimum of 10 minutes to submit any non-conforming bid form, and this process will be outlined to you in the bidder guide provided with the Part 1 notification. By 6 p.m. on the bid date, we determine provisional winning bids and inform bidders whether or not they are provisional winning bidders. And winning bids remain provisional until approved by the Commission. That decision will be made by March 17th. Bidders may participate and are encouraged to participate in a training session on March 9th, at which time members of our team will be available to answer questions, and bidders will be able to practice the bid day procedures in full. Following our notification to winning suppliers, bidders will be asked to provide information to prepare the uniform SMA and guarantee if they were not provided with the Part 1 proposal. The Commission will issue a decision by the second business day following the bid date, at which time we provide PICO with the uniform SMA, transaction confirmations, and guarantee. PICO will then execute the contract documents and send the documents to winning suppliers. Bidders will execute and return the contract documents, as well as post additional security if necessary. So 15 days after the bid date, certain information will be posted and announced by us, namely the weighted average winning bid price by product and the number of tranches of each product procured. Of note is that the names of winning suppliers are not released. And lastly, to round things out, I'll just give you some brief information related to the RFP website. Again, the website is picoprocurement.com, and it is the central source of information relating to the RFP. It has the supplier and regulatory documents, a data room with historical data, a calendar page with important dates, a contact us page to register to receive email announcements relating to the RFP, as well as an archive page of postings from past solicitations for reference, and that archive page will also have the results from those prior solicitations. So please feel free to send us any and all questions either through our online portal, which is pictured below, or by email to picoprocurement@nira.com. We do aim to answer questions within two business days, and we will post these questions online after removing any identifying information.